This is Rapholix After Hours.
Welcome, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to Rack Addicts After Hours. This is our 20th episode, as Pete has told me. That is a score. We've done a score of episodes from our favourite pub next to our Certain Music retail shop. And now, virtually, across the internet waves into each other's homes, it's my pleasure to still be joined by Pete and Telmo today. And I've done, really, since our last episode is I've made more bagels. You done anything more interesting, guys?
That's it, is it? More bagels?
Pretty much, just more bagels.
I've made oat milk, so if that helps.
You made oat milk?
Yeah.
How do you milk an oat?
So first of all, you need to buy these hemp bags from Amazon. They're wicked. So they're
wait, what bags?
Hemp.
Oh right.
Cannabis. So you buy these bags, and then all you have to do is just put a bunch of oats in it, drop loads of water. And obviously, the bags are made within some sort of tissue that allows the liquid to drip. And that is the milk. It's literally oats with water. And
That's it.
That's it.
Not bad. I'm a fan of oat milk myself. I am an Oatly barista man. I tried the whole milk version recently, you know, inverted commas, whole Oatly milk.
Nice.
I wasn't a fan. Baristas tell me it foams better, but I'm a barista kind of guy. How did yours turn out? Have you tried it yet?
Yeah. No, it's turning out really good. Actually, just as good as the average, the oat one. I don't really feel any difference. It's really nice to drink it, and it's homemade. What else can you ask for?
Yeah, nice. Are you an oat milk kind of, if you're a milk alternative, Pete, which one do you go for?
I'm not a milk alternative, but I do the lactose-free milk.
Nice. That's really good, man. Do you feel any difference in terms of taste when you have the lacto one?
It seems to agree with my stomach more than conventional or standard pasteurized milk. Other than that, I mean, and also, even though it's fresh, it keeps a hell of a lot longer.
Nice. Oh, yeah, what, once it's open?
The expiry dates on the cartons tend to be up to 4 weeks. For some reason, extracting the lactose makes it less likely to degrade for whatever reason. So I don't want to think about the process of how they get the lactose out of it. I don't know what they're doing to it.
There's something sciencey in there.
But it tastes like proper milk rather than sort of long life milk that can sometimes, or my recollections of using long life milk taste a bit sort of, doesn't quite taste.
Cow juice.
As long as it's not like powdered milk or something horrible. Right, been up to much, you lovely gentleman?
Yes, well, I'm right in the midst of the Befaco hex mix.
Yes, where have you got to?
Well, I'm only really laying out all the resistors. I didn't realise there were so many resistors. Yeah, well, no, actually, installing them in the board and soldering them in. But there's so many of them. I mean,
there's a few.
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, I was going to say, how long did you say it took to make this kit?
Well, given how thorough I imagine you'll be with a bit of knolling, individual resistor testing and such, it's going to be a lot longer than it would take me. I was impatient, and I would probably hazard a guess at lucky that it still worked. If it was on a work day and I finished maybe 2 or 3 in the morning, we're talking a good 7 or 8 hours, I think.
Okay. I'm expecting it to take me a week.
Oh!
I mean, yes, there's a lot of testing going on, a lot of really organising, a lot of checking, double-checking as well, and so forth. I'm scrupulous in respect to cleaning off the flux and things like that. I sit there.
I am not.
I have it under a big lit magnifying apparatus. And I use finely pointed bamboo skewers, the sort of things you use for barbecues, but they're perfect for sitting there picking all the encrusted flux off. And then I actually wash the boards with flux remover afterwards to get that really pristine.
Yeah, that is something I would like to add to my kind of routine. Because some of my pre-built modules, like my Batumi from... Chaos Devices has some kind of kind of gubbins going on the back that I might want to clean up at some point.
Yeah. I can imagine the commercial builders, let's put it that way, have got to be a lot quicker in the respect of how they put together the modules, or they become uneconomical. So that I can only afford to do this because it's purely for my own purposes and so forth. And also, I'm deriving quite a... There's a therapeutic sort of a cathartic pleasure in sitting there just doing something, because it's although there's a lot of thought about making sure that the components are correct and everything is in its right place, there's not a great deal of thought. It's I'm not having to think too much. It's a very repetitive process. So yes, it's got this sort of almost transcendental kind of experience of sitting there soldering in the whirling of the extractor fan and the sort of talk radio burbling away in the background. It's quite pleasant, actually.
Nice. I remember, I don't know if you actually did, because I know you've got a TTSH kit knocking about, but did you get or sign up for a Lyra DIY?
I did sign up to be on the waiting list. Mm. I've heard nothing, so I can't
imagine. That was a good while ago, wasn't it?
Yes, but it's typical of the case with many sort of very small builders, that their sort of lead times on things are, you know, excruciating.
Yeah.
I mean, there was another project, in fact, I can't remember the name. It was a small box that was a standalone MIDI, like a MIDI hub, but it actually had a sequencer or some programmable capabilities built in, so that you could actually go in and program MIDI sequences in it. And I think I've been waiting, I want to say 6 months at the moment. They do send periodic emails to say about their progress. You get sort of infinite detail about how the paint turned out on the outside, and you know, where they've got the circuit boards from and all this sort of stuff, which is great. It's the worst thing in the world is to sort of pre-order or ask for something and just wait indefinitely and hear nothing. So feedback's everything in that respect. So
yeah, of course.
I'm expecting to see that maybe in the next month or so, which by the end of it, it'd most probably be an 8-month wait. But as we know, you know, from our experience in retail, the waits can be excruciating long, especially when you think about certain guitar manufacturers, certain models of guitars.
Oh, of course, yeah.
We've all heard the stories about 18-month waits or even longer.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, man, absolutely. I like that you mentioned DIY, because a few months ago, about half a year ago, I bought this DIY synth kit. Biotechnology Will Save Us. I don't know if you guys ever heard of it.
Not at all.
So I went to this fair in London. It's one of those hippish kind of fairs in Shoreditch, where you get in and there's like all sorts of like new companies, emerging companies, and one of them was these guys, Tech Will Save Us. And I was quite intrigued by the sort of stuff that they were doing. They're not necessarily just for synths, but they do all sorts of stuff. They do like mini games, make your own mini game, pocket game kind of things, which is quite cool. And I've been playing with it recently as well. I've been connecting it to my pedal board, like making all sorts of like weird sounds.
Nice.
Yeah, it sounds amazing. Along with as well, this Moog app that I've downloaded off the App Store.
Is that the ones they'd offered for free recently?
Yeah, it was like 20 odd pounds back in the day, and now it's completely free. Yeah. So you can just do the same thing. Just grab your phone, iPhone 7, 8, whatever, X, just plug into your pedal board as well and do the same thing. And really cool sounds, putting some delays in front of it, some like cool distortion and modulation. Sounds great.
Oh, yeah, actually, speaking of the Moog app, Mylar Melodies did, he performed Moogfest last year, maybe the year before, and his set was with that app.
There we go.
He did a whole set just with the app on his phone. He's just kind of sitting cross-legged in the middle of the floor, just blooping away. It's all on YouTube. It's quite a good watch.
Oh, I need to check that out. Maybe I'll take some ideas.
Yeah, speaking of the gent himself, he's recently started, actually uploaded it today, yesterday, I don't know, new series. Which is called Suggested Systems. So if you're a modular person or a Eurorack modular person, he's kicked it off with trying to do trying to channel the Buchler music easel in various ways. And it's an hour-long video, which definitely going to be a good watch. But just talking about the easel, how you can achieve some of its interesting features and the West Coast sound, I suppose, wave folders and complex oscillators and things, but all confined to an IntelliGel Palette 62HP case. It's pretty cool. And Ismaila Melodies, his videos are great. So a good watch.
It would end up being considerably cheaper than actual Buchler itself.
Yep, because they are about £4,000. And ouch. I don't know whether or not they're really worth it. You know, worth it.
They've always been excruciatingly expensive. In fact, before I actually looked at Eurac quite some time ago, and I was sort of looking at 5U type things like synthesizer.com and is it Moon Modular and Club of Knobs and all these sort of bigger formats, I came across Buchler. And I think their full-size system, is it the 20E or something like that? And
I can't remember what they're called. There's one that you can get from KMR Audio called the Skylab, which is one of the larger ones. It's about £12,500, the full system.
They're not cheap. I mean, the people who have them seem to absolutely rage about them. But the whole format, the formatting is different. It's the sort of... You can only plug certain things to other things, I believe. Is that the case?
Because of they're based on kind of banana jacks, and there's color coding for inputs and outputs. And unlike Eurorack, I think there is a higher potential to actually fry things if you're not too careful, or damage them in some way. So you do need to know a little bit more about it before you just go ham.
Yeah, one wouldn't want to do that when you've just shelled out many monies on one of those.
Just a few squids.
Yeah, it'd be nice to get my hands on one. It'd be nice to have a play with one. That would be quite cool.
I'd love to have a go. Eurorack people will probably know the name Ross LeMond, who's a big case maker and general kind of friend of the community. He's just one of those all-round great guys. Don't think he's doing much at the moment, but he was at the... Brighton Modular Meet when I went a couple of years ago, showing off some of his cases. That's the only time I've seen Buchler. So he did a really, really big, you know, those overarching things. It'd be like up to your chest if you stood it on the floor kind of size. Huge. I think in the Buchler world, they call them boats for some reason. I don't really know why. It was imposing.
I see. So that's the... And this was... How recently was this?
Couple of years ago. I think it was two years back.
Mm. And was that, because unfortunately Don Buchler passed away a couple of years ago. I can't remember exactly when. Was he, prior to that or?
Just in the break of it.
Shall we jump into our second topic that you've prepared for us, Pete?
Yeah, so I was quite interested because I've managed to order some things from some... what I've described in this day and age and the circumstances we find ourselves are quite obscure or distant places, and then find stuff that I would be able to just literally get locally quite impossible. So we've talked about supply chain problems within the sort of music hardware, but I wanted to expand that to just anything that you're finding easy to get that you find surprising, and things that you would expect to be able to get quite hard.
Yeah, well, one thing I didn't know that I would be even looking to buy, obviously it falls into the category of absolutely not an essential, it's just I need to do things. I have an avocado plant.
Nice.
I have this really nice glass jar by a company called Ilex. It's got this little kind of cup, like an egg cup sized bit, and it kind of goes down to this big reservoir thing. So you just pop the avocado seed on the top after germinating it, and it will just grow its roots down and do its thing. And it looks really, really nice. After a certain point, though, you've got to take it out, you know, pot it properly, and it's looking a bit sad, like it needs more nutrients than just water. So I've been looking for terracotta pot and some composty soil. Our local B&Q is doing click and collect stuff, but on their website, there is no compost of any kind in stock. So I didn't think I'd be looking for it, but compost is now a rare commodity around here.
So have they actually sold it all, or are they just not listing it? Because I know a lot of the DIY places have rationalised their offering.
It could potentially be a rationalisation. It might be there. They're just not selling it. But that's what it looks like at the moment. So I can't get hands on it.
I did attempt to acquire some fence paint several weeks ago, and although I could see it on the particular website of the retailer I was looking at, it just stated at the top, this is deemed non-essential and hence you can't order it.
It'd be nice to have the rationale, but B&Q hasn't told me, so I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're all, each different retailer is making it up as they go along, so to speak. But I get the gist from the chatter on the wire, or the sort of talk of the release of the lockdown, that some of the first places that will be opened up will be places like garden centres and so forth. So potentially those sort of things. Because the example I had was that I was able to order some studio components from Germany, from Thomann.
Yeah.
And they arrived in short order, but I can't get some fence components from a retailer that's about a mile and a half away from me.
Yeah, it's a bizarre world, isn't it? It's kind of weird, because I go to this, I think I mentioned last week about this farm shop that I go, and the garden centre is open over there. So you can...
Oh, I'll have to have a look for my compost and my pots.
So yeah, you're probably going to be able to find it. I haven't really been struggling at all. I'm trying to think of anything, but this last week I only really left home to either A, go for a run, or B, smell the birds because I'm weird, and C, to get some food. I don't know. I've just, toilet paper doesn't seem to be a problem anymore.
No, thankfully.
Oh, there was a massive destruction downstairs on the one of my neighbors had a leak from one of the pipes, so that bursted out, so that was fun. That was another time that I had to leave as well, so D. So yeah, that's pretty much it. Again, going back to the no supplies, I haven't been struggling at all, but I haven't been looking for special things like you guys are, so...
Well, I think it only happens when it suddenly occurs to you, I need one of these widgets, and then you go and seek the widget, and you identify where you could get the widget from, and they either haven't got any stock, because or they are not open because they're all shut and they furloughed the staff, or they just refuse to sell it to you because it's, as I say, it's not deemed essential. The other thing I was going to, and this is more understandable in some respects, I was thinking it might be a good time to buy a new iPad because mine's showing its age a bit. I was having a think, and it's at least 9 years old, and it's getting a bit generally sluggish. And
well, just started doing that recently, that is a really good run for an iPad.
I tend to rinse my consumer electronics out, you know, try and get the best out of them, but it really is showing up. It's long since being able to actually update the OS, and a substantial amount of apps don't actually function anymore because the apps are being updated to keep up with the latest iOS version, and now they no longer work on the version that my iPad is frozen at. So I think it's a generation 3. It was just prior to them adopting the Lightning connector, and it's before the Air.
Wait, so it still has the 30 pin?
Yes, it has the 30 pin.
Classic.
Yes, classic.
So I took to the internet, as one does when you want one of these things, and had a look around, and there wasn't a lot of options. So, but that's understandable, because I would imagine that they did, knowing how distribution works, no one wants to sit on stock for any particular amount of time, and it just shows that even in that type of area, we operate a relatively just-in-time type of structure. So I did eventually locate one retailer that had the model that I was looking for in the colour I was looking for, because it was a case that you were, if you wanted one, there were the odd one around, but you had to have it in a potential finish. I know that sounds a bit pedantic, but there's a finish that you want, and there was only the rose gold, which I thought was a bit gauche, to be honest.
Oh, I wouldn't mind if I was you. I wouldn't mind. I would look for refurbished ones. They're doing a lot of companies out there doing refurbished iPads, and just phones in general as well. You can get them at decent prices with warranty and everything.
Yes, no, I'm aware, because I do buy quite a lot of refurbished laptops for various customers of mine, and they also do sort of some Apple equipment. The tendency there, they're fine and they do work, and you're right, they're all warranted, but I particularly wanted one of the 2019 iPads because it's a larger screen slightly, and they're actually, the actual retail price, they're slightly cheaper than they actually were originally, because... I mean, the base iPad was always $399. So if you're in the US, I assume that was $399, and if you're in the UK, £399.
Yep. But we have to lump
the
it.
Actual, the 2019 version is actually $349, I wanted to actually say.
Well, since we're in the vogue of buying things, I need to mention the fact that I need to buy a new amp, a new guitar.
Oh yeah.
Yes, it's something that I've been struggling for the past month or so, probably because I've been at home just thinking about my guitar tone like everyone else. So one of the things that I was considering is, by the fact that I recently also got a bass and I've been playing loads of bass, by getting that one amp that will do brilliant things, such as serving the guitar, giving me a great clean guitar tone, and a really nice bass tone. So I don't know if anyone out there is an expert in amps. I've got this thing for Fender amps. I was looking into this sort of, late 70s silver face bass amps that they sound brilliantly if you put a guitar in front of it with 12-inch, like the Music Master and stuff like that. So I love those tones. They're not particularly big. I've got a relatively simple pedal board. So I don't know. If anyone's have any recommendations, that would be lovely.
Well, where can they leave their comments, Pete? What would be the best?
Possibly on the Rack Addicts Facebook page would be the best place to leave comments for that.
Nice one. If you're a guitar amp man, Telmo needs you. Or woman, of course. Whoever, whatever knowledge you have in the guitar world, it's certainly a hell of a lot more than I do. Superbooth. I do really want to go to Superbooth, but naturally this time it's not happening. So there's Superbooth Home Edition. I know nothing about it. Take it away, Peter.
Yeah, I was perusing the internet, as one does these days, as we will have a lot more spare time possibly on our hands, and noticed that, this announcement came up on the Sonic State website, so they're involved in this. So they're putting on a series of virtual events, which is the rigueur for these days. I'm not really sure. They didn't elaborate on what the events are going to consist of, but they stating that they want to recreate the atmosphere of Superbooth. So I would imagine...
To me, that means just a ransacked YouTube feed.
Yes. So they've noted various people that are going to be involved, and I would imagine more people are going to get on board. It would be nice if it was a vehicle for maybe some of the manufacturers would have things that were going to present at the Superbooth show, and maybe they've... I mean, I don't know if they've already launched them, because obviously there's no... vehicle other than the online or the web for manufacturers to make any of their announcements, or whether they're some of the manufacturers are actually holding back, sort of waiting for the sort of things to sort of die back a bit, so that
they can
actually...
difficult to figure out when would be a good time to announce your new products.
How would they do it? How would they stream it? They just get like a bunch of different videos, they would just get a camera out. How would that would happen?
I'm not quite really sure. That again, they didn't really elaborate it. They do talk about the people that are going to be... Well, they talk about, you can go to the Superbooth website, so it potentially could be channeled through all the various parties. They would have example of, or the videos or whatever they're putting out on their own platform, but also have it channeled through the Superbooth platform as well. So they talk about various people and organisations being involved. And I see Amazon, Germany, has got a certain amount of involvement with it. And they talk about people such as Heimbach being involved as well. So I can imagine other artists are going to be doing various things under the auspices. And maybe, as I said earlier, some of the manufacturers are going to... possibly do sort of bespoke videos talking about product.
Should be pretty good. I do know one thing that I absolutely can't mention on the air. I do know of a certain large manufacturer that will be releasing a certain synthesizer that is definitely got me incredibly excited, and I will be placing a pre-order. So tough listeners, you can't know, but Telmo and Pete will know as soon as we finish this podcast. But as soon as we can let you know, we will talk about it in excruciating detail, because I'm very excited about it. One of the the honcho is from the company we work for, called me on one of my days off and just said, I've got a, how many do we need? Do we want it? And I was like, yes, we do. Get one for me, please. very exciting indeed. So I'm not sure if that will be a super booth kind of announcement, but the timing might make sense.
Yeah,
potentially. It's a company that's there normally anyway, so
it's really,
we'll see
cool
how it goes.
Because they have an education side as well, Superbooth, don't they? They've highlighted one of the Pioneer Palast tradition from the late 70s, and this is one of the interesting things that they do as well, is if you're a parent or teacher or a student or a lecturer, and if you know someone that wants to be participating in this program, just to get kids involved in this world, which is quite interesting. This new generation needs to know about electronic modular, about what is the music of what the music may sound in the future, really, that they're going to be the ones. So it's quite interesting to mention this as well.
Hopefully that will still continue in some virtual way as well. Yeah. So, as kind of a what's the word for what NAMM is? Trade show. It's kind of a trade show.
Yeah.
So having that alongside, it's an interesting thing to try and turn virtual anyway.
Yeah.
I see we've got some Korg news as well.
Yeah, Korg announced the release of the what they call the collection. It used to be called the Legacy Collection, and they've got a version 2. I'm slightly underwhelmed by this, but maybe they're just trying to maintain momentum as there's a sort of a lack of the hardware that was promised. I mean, obviously, they've most probably got logistics and manufacturing issues along with everybody else. So they've apparently upgraded the Legacy Collection, or the collection, in respect to, it looks like they've only really attended to the actual graphical interface and the actual aesthetics of it. Don't think there's really much difference in the functionality. The collection had certain items added in 2019 to it, but it goes back to 2004, where the original Legacy Collection was out. So to be honest, not much has changed.
So it's just an update on the service, basically.
Yeah, well, it's an update. It's free if you've already got the collection already. You've already subscribed to it. And there's also a discount on if you're a new user to it and you want to acquire it. So originally it was $399 and it's now $299.
Not too bad.
So people, if you're interested in Korg software, there we go.
I know there's I know a lot of fans of the Korg. Was it the Triton software that they kind of released recently?
Yeah, that was one of the additions to the collection when they sort of renamed it. And I would imagine most of the digital stuff works really well. I'm always I know that analog emulation is quite good, but I'm always a bit cynical. Analog really needs to be analog in my mind. But I'm a bit of a purist when it comes to that.
Yeah.
When it comes
like
to
them to be holdable and tweakable.
Yeah, I mean, always everyone wants a knob to twiddle.
Absolutely.
Or to fiddle.
possibly the biggest news of last week that I have to say completely passed me by. I didn't hear anything about it. Is One World Together at Home. Pete, you added this to our little our show notes. Tell us about it, because I did check out a few of the, because it's been chopped up into separate sort of artist performance videos, separate performance videos. A lot of them were really ropey. Anyway,
that was the point I wanted to come on to. I thought it was the great leveler, but I mean, I think this was broadcast on Saturday night, but US time. So it was the sort of middle of the night, early hours of the morning here. The whole stream, and I believe the whole stream continues for roughly 8 hours, but there's a lot of nothing happening at the beginning.
Yeah.
We're sort of waiting to cue the various artists up, and I would imagine sort of combat various technical issues. But I was quite interested to think how much of this was actually genuinely live, because I don't know which particular artists that you dipped in and had a listen to or had a sort of a gander at what they were up to. And some of them were, and as you can imagine, with most of the leading artists, the performances were very, how can I put this? They were very competent at what they did. And in one always should well, to, I would say to the greater degree they wrote it, but there was a lot of people doing covers anyway. And there was some duets and there were some larger ensembles, so to speak. Yeah,
I was quite impressed with Keith Urban. His obviously wasn't live because he did some video stuff to clone himself. So he has himself as two backup singers. But what interested me is he did his drums and bass parts with a Synthstrom Deluge, which I totally didn't expect from a country guitar man.
Yeah, that's it.
But no, his was excellent.
I really
enjoyed Eddie Vedder's as well.
Nice.
That was great. The Killers and Paul McCartney, on the other hand.
Did you see the Rolling Stones? Hang on.
I really don't like the Rolling Stones anyway, so I avoided it.
The reason why you need to watch the Rolling Stones is that obviously they split the screen in four. So you've got obviously the song starts with Mick on the guitar, and then the other two guitar players came in. But then there's the other square which says Charlie, which is the drummer, right? So you can hear the drums, which are clearly a backing track. Right.
Oh, yeah.
So they start before the actual screen goes up. And when the screen does, you see Charlie playing this weird black box around him, which is like there's several actually black boxes around him. And he's pretending to playing this drum kit, but he's not actually playing the drum kit. You see what I mean? So it's just so weird because he's just there.
Amazing. Like, I'll have to take a look once we've
watched it. Yeah, it was I don't know how to describe it. It did actually make the several news channels. The fact that he had no drums and he wasn't even hitting the boxes. The sort of drumsticks were just floating, flailing around in the air.
Something like that.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, and it made me think exactly which pick. Because, I mean, with Mick Jagger starting, you think, well, he definitely seems to be live because the acoustics of some of the environments they were actually playing in. I know they were sort of broadcasting or they were performing from their abodes or one, you know. Obviously, some of these artists have got several abodes, but they were sort of in their houses. But the acoustics sort of were quite lacking in some of them.
Yeah, well, sort of look at Lady Gaga's one. She's got a specific acoustic in her room that really it's very intrinsic. So you could tell that was live.
Yes. Yeah, it was a very bright room, wasn't it?
It was quite
stupid. But I would imagine that was carrying her voice quite well. I know her performances were very slick, to be honest.
Oh, she's lovely. Well. She's lovely. My favourite one was Stevie Wonder's. Just the way that he puts Bill Withers into the whole scene as well. I mean, such a massive influence in just pop music these days. And, you know, despite the whole coronavirus... at least someone remembered him as he should be, as a musical influence.
Nice. Well, Lady Gaga organised like a lot of it, didn't she?
Well, she was certainly intrinsic to the organisation of it. But you know, if you look at the flyer that I put on the show notes, there's a massive host of companies that were involved and some of the high tech. So we've got IBM, we've got Cisco. So because I was wondering what they were using for streaming, because it didn't look like Zoom.
Yeah, it didn't.
Potentially it was, but I suspect it was something either from Cisco, because Cisco have got quite a lot of teleconferencing type of thing. Mm. They've been in it for a number of years, and potentially IBM. So some of them were very good, but some of them you felt that they really hadn't quite made the effort.
Yeah.
Some of it looked like it was just on a phone. It was just...
Yeah, I mean, the last headline I saw was, I think, $127 million, which obviously no small amount of money raised. So even if they are a little bit ropey for a good cause.
Hmm. Yeah, no, it was. I would imagine it was the Live Aid for the millennial generation.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. But one thing that bothers me is something that you just mentioned. I think there's a very interesting positive things to take from this. As if we see this as being the 2020 version of Live Aid, we see artists like Lady Gaga, like Elton John, like Stevie Wonder, like Hozier, like Keith Urban taking it a really. Sincere and really from the heart approach to it. And you can see that they're really putting a lot of effort into it. While others, as you just mentioned, like I've seen the Charlie Puth one. I don't even know who he is. I think he's some sort of pop singer.
He's a pop guy and actually an incredibly talented musician.
I bet he's great. But the fact that he was doing this live streaming, you know, with his bed, absolutely, I can't really swear. I apologize. a mess.
Rack Addicts After Hours.
with a mess just behind him. I mean, come on, show yourself some dignity. Come on, there's people, you know, wanting to see something proper out of you, man.
I know, right?
Yeah, I mean, I did see the unmade bed. There was a lot of, I mean, the popular press was saying, oh, we can see into their homes, we can see what's going on. I was more sort of saying, what mic is that they're using? What's
yeah, that? There's the one that I saw with
Lady Gaga's one is this amazing.
I think it's that would look Celine like Dion, Andrea Bocelli, Lady Gaga, like this really big, it was a John Legend one as well. There's this Sony Valve microphone that I always recognise, but I can never remember the model number. I just know it's excruciatingly expensive.
Yeah.
Is it the C800?
With the big heatsink thing hanging out the back?
Yeah, so it's the Sony C800 Valve mic. Really, really famous in the vocal recording and voiceover world. Let me see if I can get actually a price on there for you. Carry on, lads. I'm going to hunt down a price.
Now, I was looking at Sheryl Crow's microphone, and it looks just like, I'm trying to see if it's an SC microphone. It looks like to me just an average dynamic. Is this sure? I'm not quite sure. See what I did there.
Hey. There's so for this the Sony C800G, last one to go on Reverb, I can see around about £9,000.
Oh, wow.
6,000, 6,000, 5,000, 6,000. So, yeah, it's a chunky one.
And then Elton John just had an SM58.
Yeah.
In the garden. All I was thinking about, how did he get that piano in the garden? Is it there always? Or...
is it sinking into the grass now?
It's always been there. It's always been there, Pete.
I just visions of him and his partner trying to carry this grand piano out into the
Yeah, that's never going to be an easy one.
I've got to imagine they've got sort of live-in help.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or it might be one of those ones that he's on stage. It's actually just a Nord in a box.
Okay, so it's making out that it's a... No, it looked like a genuine grand piano. Yeah. It had all the... I noticed that Lady Gaga's was some sort of, I don't know whether it was a crossover one, but it was a Yamaha of some description, but there was a lot of electronics. So I don't know if it was a digital piano or one of these kind of, you get these crossover pianos, don't they? Mm. So it's strung, but it's got an electronic component to them. And I think it can also be a silent piano.
Yeah. I think the Killers did the Mr. Brightside. On the
it was so hot. It was so bad.
Did you see the Casio keyboard? Is there Casio?
No, I tuned out about 5 minutes, five seconds in. It just hurt me.
Oh boy, oh boy.
It was something special in a bad way.
I was sort of again feeling my ages, which I normally in these situations where I was thinking, who is that? I don't know who most of these people are.
No, you're not alone. I didn't recognise a lot of the names as well.
It's because we're very indie.
But it was also very US-centric because there was a UK version last night, I haven't even delved into. There's a lot of these things. It's like a lot of these charity things that are going on at the moment, and I'm sure they're going on all over the world, but certainly in the UK we've had all these people doing sort of marathons in their garden or climbing the stairs, sort of, you know, the same sort of amount of... distance as of climbing a mountain or something like that. And it just seems like there's a lot of people jumping on the bandwagon. I mean, it's great if it all goes to a good cause. Obviously, there's always a lot of good causes. It just seems like you think, oh, that's already been done.
I generally think it's a really good way of bringing people together. I mean, we need music. I love music. It's a great idea. Do it. I've been following this this Portuguese singer-songwriter. He's been doing amazing stuff in terms of live streaming. He's super famous. I bet not everyone knows him, Miguel Araújo. But he, every night at 8:30 in the evening, he puts his kid to sleep. And he puts his phone down, but it's just on a live stream. And he's just playing music for him. So it's literally like having someone whispering with a ukulele at your ear as you go to sleep.
That's amazing.
Which is a great idea. Cute. So brings up humanity and brings the best of all of us. So
no, it is good. And I mean, we did. It's exactly what we discussed. I can't remember if it was episode 17 or 18, but it's exactly what we discussed about everything going virtual. And I just think it is somewhat of a leveler. It kind of, some of these high-end sort of acts that have been around for decades, it sort of always brought them down to our level.
Yeah.
But it also, in my mind, you've got a series of people that have been doing this sort of streaming for years, especially in the modular world. You know, think of people like Colin Bender and
Blink,
you know, many others. They've been at it all the time, and it seems ironic that these sort of international superstars that are normally doing world tours and all the celebrity bit have been reduced to
garden tours,
sort of some sketchy live stream from their bedroom.
Yeah,
that's it.
Right, I think what we should do to round off this podcast is give you some bits and pieces to, you know, fill a little bit of time with. I've got a few recommendations of media for you to consume when you have nothing better to do. If you guys want to collect your thoughts on anything you'd like to recommend, I'll kick off with one YouTube video and one Instagram account. We'll start with the Instagram account if you're an Insta spam type person. This one is, if you go on the desktop world, instagram.com/animals and synthesizers. You can see this is going to be a good one. So if you're like me and you grew up watching the Blue Planet, I always enjoyed the episode which was the deep sea ones with all the creepy, weird, bioluminescent creatures and strange-shaped doodads. They'd always have really cool sound design on them because obviously they wouldn't have actually recorded any audio down there. So some fun sound effects. It's basically what this Instagram account is doing. Sometimes it's more of a musical piece to accompany footage of nature, of creatures. And a lot of the time it's quite synthy, strange noises. So one of my favorites is, you know, you get those big African millipedes. So normally you think of a millipede and it's a couple of centimeters long, it's really tiny. These chunky ones can be like, you know, 30 centimeters long, and they have heft. But you know that really cool way that their legs go in these little waves, and you can kind of watch the little waves go, and obviously they've got tons of legs and doing the little thing. But it's this really interesting, it sounds very modular, the sound that this guy's put to the footage. As far as I'm aware, it's all done in Ableton, but there's loads of really interesting ones. So this millipede, there's some nice ambient stuff for a kind of a jellyfish. One of the other favorites is a really chunky moth just kind of chilling on a post, and its wings kind of opening and closing. But there's some really nice kind of synth sounds in it. So that's definitely good to kill, I don't know, maybe five or 10 minutes. But that's definitely an account I'd recommend you follow. The other one, which I just remembered when, Pete, you mentioned people doing like a marathon in their back garden. A YouTube account, a guy called Bo Miles, who I believe is from New Zealand, potentially Australia. I'm really bad at differentiating the accents, and I also don't know where he's from anyway. He did a project where it's called the A Mile an Hour, Running a Different Kind of Marathon. That's the title of the video. Where his house is, there's sort of a vaguely square ring of roads that he can run that's pretty much a mile long. So he does that 26 times for his marathon, but he runs one lap every hour. And in between, he's accomplishing loads of these projects that he wanted to do. So one of the breaks in between, he cooks a meal. Another one, he's, fixing some DIY kind of stuff around his property. Obviously, this takes him, 26 hours to finish. It sounds like something really kind of boring to watch, but the way he kind of presents, the way he thinks out loud as he's going, it was a 17-minute video, really worth the watch. He's also done some interesting things like running an old train line that's long since passed, but you can kind of just see where it goes through the landscape. He runs along that. He kayaks 2,000 kilometers. Really interesting guy. I definitely recommend him.
That's amazing.
What do you guys got?
Really cool, man. Pete, what do you got?
Well, the one to look out for that I'm just trying to find when it's actually going to be out is this week, that everyone most probably should watch, assuming they've got Netflix. It's the new David Attenborough, which is the One World
Is that the one where he didn't he sort of bail out from the BBC because they weren't funding the project he wanted or something?
Possibly. I mean, this one is really sort of drive home his message about the destruction of the planet and what we're doing to the planet. So a very apt message for the times that we are in. And I'm just trying to find out. I think it's this week. I don't know which day it's actually coming out on, but I think it's just the one video. But I saw an interview with him, and basically saying that we've overrun the planet, and we're going to reap the whirlwind, so to speak. So it's most probably quite key or worth watching. Something else that completely along the sort of it's not a natural thing, I've got a little anecdote to go with it. Basically, I was lying in bed last night trying to drift off. And trying to sort of let go of all the worries of the world that we are experiencing at the moment.
Do you meditate? And,
sorry?
Do you meditate, Pete? Is that some sort of meditation?
No, I should do. Anyway, my phone rang and I sort of looked at it. It was my friend Dean, who was in Cornwall. And for our sort of non-UK listeners, Cornwall's in the south west of the UK, and it's the bit that sort of gets thin and tapers off going out into the Atlantic, and that's roughly about 300 miles away from where we are. And I thought, well, there's something must have happened, what's going on? So when I answered it, Dean was sort of getting very excited, going, have you seen it, have you looked in the sky, have you seen the sort of satellites? And I couldn't really make out what he was doing, so I sort of got out of bed, looked out the window and going, I don't know what you're talking about. And he was just blurting all this out. And then so I decided to go out into the back garden. So I'm standing in the back garden in my pyjamas looking up. And there it was. So basically, about a year ago, SpaceX launched a constellation of 60 satellites. And they're very low Earth orbiting satellites. And they are designed to provide internet to very remote areas. I think that's the whole goal of it. But they orbit the Earth in a line. So there's various websites that you can actually utilize to find out when they are going to be coming across your particular part of the Earth. And they came tracking over, and it was one of the most surreal and bizarre things I've ever seen. Because occasionally,
by in a line, you mean kind of that all the satellites are in a big long string.
Yes, exactly. Oh, right. Like a string of pearls. Literally.
Was it clearly visible, Pete?
Yeah, it was a very clear night, and the nights are getting clearer. I don't know if that's just the lack of chemtrails or something like that. It's no planes.
Pollution.
You quite often see, if you do sort of spend any time looking up, you'll see the odd satellite going over, or if you're lucky enough, you might see the ISS or something like that. But this was continuous for about 20 minutes, and these things are going across in an absolutely straight line. There was the odd one that seemed to be slightly askew, but I don't know if they're other satellites in similar orbits or something like that. But this thing just came over the horizon from the, I want to say, from the south west, and proceeded to go to the northeast. And I was sort of joined by my daughter, and we'd spent ages, and I had my friend on speaker on my iPhone squawking. I don't know what the neighbours thought, because he was very animated about it, and he's sort of going on about it, and we all sort of spent time. And it's the speed they're approaching, because as I say, he's 300 miles away, and he's saying, oh, there's another. Because there were certain gaps, so they would come in. So there were some fits and starts. There was a major concentration of them, and then there was a few stragglers. And he was describing them seeing them, and we would see them within a minute, if not 30 seconds, from him seeing it from that distance. So I don't know quite how high the orbit is, but if anyone gets an opportunity, I would certainly advise it. It's one of those things. I've never seen anything quite like it in my life. It was. Once you actually sort of locked on and found out where they were, you there was no missing it.
And so I was just probably in my couch eating chocolate, watching Mr. Bean on the TV.
missed out. I think I was watching Lord of the Rings.
It's completely oblivious. I wasn't even aware of the actual launch, which, as I say, I think it was May 2019 when they actually went up. There was a lot of criticism from the sort of people saying that you're just sort of polluting the outer atmosphere even more with more space junk. But as I say, they do have a purpose. And I believe My friend was saying that the SpaceX operators who operate these satellites are also working from home. So they, I don't know if they're remote desktoping into their systems at their control center, but that's even more bizarre. So these satellites have been sort of operated from remotely and then remotely again.
Well, that to me is absolutely plausible. What obviously that it's not working at the moment is all the engineers and all the assembling teams and stuff like that, which I think obviously they wouldn't be. But you can operate those machines by far.
Well, it's the only way to do it. Yeah. Most cases with satellites,
it's the only way
and
to
I
do
did
it.
I did do a little bit of reading, and these satellites aren't—they're not massive satellites because some satellites can be really quite big. And these ones, I believe they weigh about, and obviously it's a US sort of, it's imperial, so it was £500 per satellite.
What we're talking is that sort of one Sputnik? I sort of know visually how big Sputnik was.
Roughly around 200 kilos.
Is that three shillings?
Sort of back of the,
no. Three. Oh, sorry.
Actually, speaking
I always find
of,
that quite strange that to a degree that the US still uses imperial measurements.
Mm.
Whereas the UK, where the imperial measurements came from, we no longer really use them. We're very much on the metric system.
Yeah, a well, point of consternation all over the internet, as far as I know.
The UK is kind of like half-half in a lot of things, you know. It's kind of half-half EU, not quite sure, half-half metric, ugh, imperial, I'm not quite sure. It's a lot of indecision.
Yeah, I can switch back and forward relatively. I can sort of jump between feet and inches to sort of centimetres and metres relatively easily.
Well, at least we don't have to deal with 240 pence to the pound, shillings, halfpennies, farthings, crowns and all of that rubbish anymore.
Well, this will be something that you guys won't actually have any recollection of because it was way before your time, but I certainly remember going through decimalisation and...
Yeah, no, my dad's got his coin collection out at the moment because he's going to try and vaguely value it to try and shift it along. And I've asked him to take a picture of sort of all of the pre-decimal currency so you can see how many sort of bits are in what coin and how stupid the whole thing was.
Well, there's a variety of reasons because I think it's connected to the guineas and other weird sort of currencies.
Oh, yeah.
So the idea was to unify a currency to the colonies as well, or...?
No, it's just to make it make sense,
right,
to human beings.
It's such an old currency. The pound is sort of, I would imagine, it's one of the oldest currencies still in existence.
Mm.
Mm. But I certainly remember decimalisation because I can remember all the sort of vox pops when they would be interviewing these sort of grannies in the street, sort of freaking out about...
Yeah, and if you actually want to watch those now, if you search British Path or Pathé, I don't know how you pronounce it, decimalisation on YouTube, the top one is a collection of all of those clips. It's really funny. Just seeing the I think the pound it's brilliant. I love it.
Yeah, sort of in speaking that weird BBC received English type of sort of very forced
late 60s BBC commenting. I love that. George Best.
Yeah,
sorry,
it's a good
I can't
watch.
Remember. Was that, it sort of it's either around? It was 1970. I want to say 1970 or something like that.
Yeah, this video is from 1970. I think it was 68 potentially it started turning up.
Well, there was quite a warm-up. We were having sort of intensive lessons at school about the sort of new ways of counting coin.
Mm. It's funny enough, you mentioned BBC. This kind of comes across something that I discovered this week. So Robert Johnson, blues master, everyone's heard of him, right? Delta Blues.
I haven't.
Well, okay.
Sorry, Telmo.
Okay.
We're not as cultured as you.
That's okay. My fellow Americans, I'm pretty sure they have heard of Robert Johnson. He was basically the first blues superstar that ever appeared to the face of the earth. There was this whole story that he was found in a crossroads and he had to go down the path where he sold his soul to the devil in order to become a rock star. So there's this whole myth behind him. We're talking about, you know, Mississippi, late 30s, going out in the wild, you know, segregation.
Basically as blues as it is possible
as
for
a
human
possible.
Being to be.
Exactly. However, there was an interview, and this whole thing happened up in the 70s, and BBC went to Scotland and they found a stone statue of Robert Johnson in the middle of the Scottish mountains, which was absolutely ridiculous. I absolutely advise you to go on YouTube or the BBC archive.
iPlayer,
something like that, and find out about this, because the story is absolutely, it's marvelous. It was about a man that heard Robert Johnson's music and he transcended to a different, completely different continent, really. So imagine Robert Johnson doesn't have a statue in, you know, whatever Mississippi, but it does in the high mountains of Scotland.
There we go. Well, I think we've given you quite enough to be getting on with, to enjoy your isolation, make it a little bit less boring. Thank you for choosing Rack Addicts After Hours to entertain, hopefully entertain you. And we look forward to seeing you in our third decade, in our third set of 10 episodes. Anyway, we'll see you next time in episode 21. Stay safe, wash your hands, wear face masks, all the stuff. Don't hoard things. You know, we're kind of used to it now. We'll see you in the next one. Bye.